To get back to the employees that Ronald Reagan is sending to the Soviet Union, I described Colston Westbrook in my article, this was 12 years ago, as working, he worked for the CIA as advisor to the South Korean intelligence, to the Army, the Air Force, with linguistic training, with psychological warfare techniques, and then from February 1966 to September 69, he listed his employment as administrator of Pacific Architects and Engineers, and they provided logistical support for the Phoenix program in Vietnam. And then he came home and went to Vacaville Prison, where he worked with agents that I wrote about in the article that were from the Drug Enforcement Agency from Indiana and people from the intelligence community in California, and formed the nucleus of a group of people that were to go into the prison systems. And then they murdered Dr. Marcus Foster and then kidnapped Patty Hearst. And it was a tryout for Ronald Reagan and Meese for their what is known as a garden plot, what to do in emergencies. It was the first time the SWAT teams were introduced publicly for America, and they surrounded a house and sent a firebomb and burned six people during the dinner hour, the SLA. But the company that is being used to refurbish the help in Moscow is the same company that Colston Westbrook used for 3 years in Southeast Asia. And just to update, there's two other quick items to remind you of. I've been talking about Mordecai Vanunu, the scientist, the atomic scientist, the neutron bomb scientist, who was kidnapped, taken out of Great Britain, and the Israelis identified him as being in their prison, and they said, we have to come forward because the whole world knows it. Anyway, yes, we have him. But they announced on national television just this last Sunday evening that their trials can be secret, their sentences can be secret. You may never know if he gets sentenced for life or death penalty. And the scandal, as I've said all along, is not the showing pictures of the atomic energy, the atomic bombs that Israel has the capability of making, but the London Times story that broke September 30th had to do with Israel's neutron bomb. And that was just a month after the Cameroon excursion, where Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres was in Cameroon with the president of Cameroon, and our Defense Department flew in people to work and examine the bodies. And I believe that that was the first test. Well, the first mini-test of neutron was in Cameroon in 1984, and the findings of that are still locked up. So that Mordecai Vanunu is in the middle of that. And last week I talked at length of trying to locate who the fourth person was on the airplane with Mr. Hassenfuss in Nicaragua. There was a small item in the U.S. News November the 7th that the fourth passenger, the third dead crew man with Hassenfuss in Nicaragua, was named Freddie Vilches Blandon, B-L-A-N-D-O-N, identified as a Nicaraguan. It doesn't say why a Nicaraguan would be on a plane with three people from the CIA and the Defense Department, but the embassy in Nicaraguan embassy in Washington didn't have the name of the person, and I'll pursue and ask other news media if they have the name, because as far as I've called, they don't have the name, and there's only been one sentence in one paper that I take that has the name of this particular person. Now, as far as the news that's gushing out, I will be updating segments of it or spending an almost entire broadcast on parts of these news events, but they're coming out so fast that I just wanted to delineate the major stories in this remaining 20 minutes so that if it appears I'm jumping around, I have a pattern that I want to follow. If you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to May Brussel, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922, I will send you a bibliography sheet that I have with each program and a list of subjects that I will be referring to each week. The problem now with this news is that these items that I'm going to list with you, eight or nine of them, must be dealt separately as separate subjects, but then they almost have to be connected throughout the programs with each other, because that is the point of having these broadcasts, is to tell you the relationship of agents and people that are not put in the various news accounts. They tell you of separated events, but very seldom make connections. When I wrote Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped in 1972, there was so much news coming out about Watergate, and I wrote a three-part article, one on who was involved in Watergate and why they were there and how they got there. And the second part of the article was the links of Watergate going back to the end of World War II, the Nazi connections, and the Kennedy assassination. And part three was how Nixon really came to power in his career in Navy intelligence and supported by aerospace, mafia, and Nazis, because the Watergate didn't stand by itself. There was a continuity of the people behind him and then ready to push him off the bridge, you know, at the end of the line and get ready for Spiro Agnew when these presents are not to be shot and are not usable anymore, like the old pirate plank. The system moves them on and has somebody waiting in the wing that they have already selected. And I believe this has happened now, and that what you're seeing is a continuation of Watergate. Because the Kennedy assassination was never solved properly, anybody with a good brain and a willing ear could sit down and be told exactly who did it in not too long a time period, but it has not properly been put together, because those people selected and investigated are part of the cover-up. The Kennedy assassination has never properly been exposed, and because Watergate inquiries were limited as to motives and the real people behind them that go to the Kennedy assassination, and because Ronald Reagan's career from Warner Brothers to governor to president and his links to very important people related to Watergate and to the Kennedy assassination has never been put on the table, just as a surgeon cuts a body for an exploratory and looks at the organs, all of these things have been churning, and visible and invisible pieces of the government merge when somebody makes an event happen and there's a deep throat. In fact, Richard Allen, the former Security Council advisor, said on Crossfire this evening that you can expect some more leakage of what is going on now, that it's going to continue, and I think that's what they're afraid of. Now, the first and biggest story of the week, of course, is the arming of Iran, the Ronald Reagan using the National Security Council. He bypassed Congress, the CIA, the State Department, the Defense Department. A friend of mine was in the station here talking to me just before the program went on, and he talks about politics and reads books. And when I mentioned the Iran thing, he says, "So what? You have to get the hostages out?" And I really couldn't believe that we had a bombardment of every major news media for the entire week, and that somebody wasn't tuning on and picking up these things who is intelligent, or I thought was intelligent. I just cannot believe how people are willing to say, well, each hostage is worth $16 million. We paid $16 million for the three that got out, and then they picked up two more after that. So that's $48 million for three hostages and a lot of weapons to Khomeini. And the scandal of that has been just absolutely floored the arch-conservatives like Robert Novak and people from the Security Council, State Department, and so forth. Even they are disgusted and angry and hurt and confused. And I can't believe that most ordinary people can accept these offenses being ordinary activities. The fact that the President of the United States has been arming Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran for 18 months, and he's telling every country we don't deal with hostages. He runs a campaign, "I'm not like Carter, and I don't make bargains, and nobody has a price." And he tells France, "You can't arm Syria." And he tells Great Britain, "You can't buy anything or get anything for Gaddafi in Libya." And he's telling various countries, China, "You can't arm Iran." And then it turns out they've had Israel arming Khomeini all this time. And it's just disgusting. And if you didn't follow from the day it first broke, I guess it's hard to catch up. But that's one of the big stories that will be going on, like the Teapot Dome or Watergate. This Iranian story will never erase from American history. It's not a so what. The Congress had said there was an embargo on sending weapons to the country of Ayatollah Khomeini because of the terrorism. And the president gets a group together in the National Security Council and sends arms to them. It's not a so what. Nothing like this has ever happened. And the National Security is that agency that I said that offsets the checks and balances of the Constitution. And now they've been caught two times in 3 weeks doing just what I said they've been doing for the last 16 years. The second big story is the Nicaraguan air crash of Eugene Hasafas. And again, Congress said you cannot send military aid to the Contras. And Ronald Reagan calls in the same people and decides that, oh, sure, we can. So March 83, he meets with these people. The common denominator between these activities is Admiral John Poindexter, of the National Security Council, Mr. McFarland, formerly of the Marines, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, Vice President George Bush, who's linked to all of them, and Israel, that is was supplying Iran for us as soon as Reagan was elected. And the implications are tremendous here, because did he promise Khomeini right in 1980 that he could start getting arms if he held up the hostages until Jimmy Carter lost the election, until the day he was inaugurated? And these items I bring up to you are summaries of the news, and then I'm going to detail them at great length later in later broadcasts. The fourth item, the Nicaraguan air crash, is a scandal of George Bush linking to the murder of Che Guevara, to working with Klaus Barbie, the Nazi international fascista. The other scandal is the arming of Contras by the National Security Council with those agents, and also John Singlaub is the common denominator. And I'll mention more about him in a moment. The fourth big scandal is the pressure of Margaret Thatcher to tell countries that Syria is a terrorist country, that you have to stop sending arms. And she had the economic group in Europe saying, we can't send arms to Syria. And what got in her craw was the fact that an aeroplane, the El Al Israeli aeroplane, had a passenger on it, a woman whose suitcase had a bomb that was picked up on the machine, and she went bananas that the Syrians used Great Britain for terrorism for something that never happened. And she screams and yells, and she's used to terrorism, and the plane didn't blow up. It was a terrible thing. But I'm going into detail again the use of London, Reading, England, of a Mr. Shapoori, who heads the Pakistani group that want to form their own separate, not the Pakistan, the Sikh group, that want to form the Khalistan government. And I want to go at great length in a few weeks again with Jagjit Singh Chahun, Chauhan. I don't think I pronounced it right, but we'll say it's as close as I can get it. That's a London-based organization of the Sikhs, and their headquarters are in Ecuador with the Mossad, again with Israel, with Great Britain. And Margaret Thatcher isn't mad that on November 1985, Mrs. Indira Gandhi was murdered by these people celebrating in the streets and offering money to murder her, or that Air India went off thanks to these people, where over 350 people were killed. Margaret Thatcher is not against killing and blowing up Air India. Why did she care about El Al that didn't blow up? I mean, she over-responded to something. And again, Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, and Israel are doing what they want and cutting off countries and telling other people to do it and selectively using their terrorism. But the important thing about the Sikhs in London is that they use American aid money from Pakistan and Afghanistan to send narcotics down to Ecuador, where they work right next to and with the old Klaus Barbie cocaine connections that were forced to move from Bolivia. And when Lyndon LaRouche accuses the Queen of England or the British of being in drug traffic, he details in his newspaper the connections in Ecuador to the Mossad, to Israel, to the Middle East narcotics, and to blowing up planes, killing people, and tying in with the Nazi Fascist International, which again cuts in and connects with the Contras down in Nicaragua and George Bush's teams. Another area that is not over yet, far from over, is the summit meeting, and I will be updating articles on that. It is still one of the most important areas. It will be on the history books and the agenda of things to study for years to come. It was hastily called. We still don't know why Mr. Gorbachev met Ronald Reagan, what they said. Reagan says one thing and Gorbachev says he's lying, that somebody else controls America. We don't know why Nicholas Daniloff's arrest triggered such a response on the part of Ronald Reagan that he had to run to Iceland. We don't know much about Nicholas Daniloff except that everything in his profile is military intelligence of the highest level. This was a very important meeting, and of course Ronald Reagan will not barter away Star Wars. That was Edward Teller's baby. And again, the National Security Council that's been charged with running their army in Nicaragua with the Contras and sending arms to Iran, the National Security Council and Mr. Daniel Graham, former Defense Intelligence Agency, and the notorious Fritz Kramer, Kissinger's mentor, and Edward Teller put together the Star Wars script for Ronald Reagan in March of 1983, March 23rd. And at the time Reagan gave the speech about Star Wars, the Pentagon didn't even know about it. The government that worked with the rocket scientists in Peenemünde in Nazi Germany, with Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger and their heirs at Huntsville, Alabama, the ones that ordered the Challenger to go, even though it was being tested in the coldest weather and would surely blow up, and then turn the space shuttle program over to the military. These people concocted a Star Wars script because they've planned Star Wars going back to 1943-44. So the summit is very, very important. I have at least 150 important articles on the summit in the past 3 weeks. Is that important? Another big story to follow continuously, again, is the story of the Israeli atomic scientist Mordechai Ben-Onu, and I will pursue as hard as I can the fact that I believe that the Cameroon killing of 1,700 blacks was a testing of the neutron bomb, and that will be in the news. And this non-trial, the secret trial in Israel, is it going to stop that? Because there are other papers and articles that keep printing, particularly Spotlight, Liberty Lobby. They do it because they're so anti-Semitic. Willie Cardo keeps printing about the neutron bomb and the seriousness of the neutron bomb with Israel having it. They haven't yet made the connection to Cameroon. That has yet to be done. That's a subject that I have been hitting upon. And another subject that I'll be updating, that, and all of these link together, if you make chains or circles, all these subjects that are in the news are important. And that was the request for a special prosecutor to investigate why the Challenger, the space shuttle, went up on the coldest day of January 28th, when it was warm 3 days before and the same afternoon afterwards, and who ordered the launching of the shuttle. And a special prosecutor can, in fact, be assigned now, because the judiciary has made a complete flop. And that's what's so exciting about the news this week. The change in the judiciary, where none of these people would be called in if Strom Thurmond were chairman, Mr. Joseph Biden won't hesitate, and the committee won't hesitate to possibly have a special prosecutor. And if they're going to call Mr. Gomez and all these other characters, Lieutenant Colonel North, then they're going to request an investigation of the space shuttle. And finally, the House election, the changes in the Congress, I want to detail more. I just hurried through some of those areas tonight because it's timely, and I do want to tell the significance of the various committees, and particularly when they get to Washington, so that you get an overview of what happened. On the talk show part of my program last week, a woman called up and said she wasn't going to vote for either of the parties. It didn't matter. I think you get from what I said this evening that it mattered a hell of a bean that they're not going to go along with German biological warfare using genetic altering as a new weapon. They were so excited because with genetic altering you can make better weapons and clean up the toxic air and get employment for people and cut the funds for Star Wars, as I listed those things. It mattered a lot, and not only did good people get in, but they were intelligent people. And the exciting thing was that while all this Contra stuff was coming down and the Iranian scandals were coming down, I heard intelligent people talking on the television for the first time, and we were told the Democratic Party was dead. It was over, and all of a sudden there's a two-party system, and everyone in Washington on all the talk shows or news stories are amazed how alive it is, and it's alive and kicking, and it will hold all the committees, a Democratic Senate, a Democratic House of Representatives, but not just the old Southern Democrats that dragged their feet. Some very, very concerned people with elegant, intelligent minds. You know, you wonder, is there intelligent life on planet Earth? And yes, it's out there. It really is there. I heard it the whole past week, and I was really thrilled about it. Now, the common denominator between all of these activities is General John Singlaub. I use his name many, many times. And as I talk about these eight different major news stories, and also I meant to include the terrorism in France that came to an absolute standstill when it was connected to Francois Jeannot, the agent for Adolf Hitler and Martin Bormann and all the top Nazis, the man who hired Jacques Verges as the attorney for Klaus Barbie. As soon as George Abdullah got Jacques Verges as his attorney, And George Abdullah, the terrorist of the Paris bombings, was linked, as you note, in Zurich, Switzerland. You haven't heard a word about terrorism in France. It came to a standstill. You can talk about the Red Brigades or the Bader-Meinhof, and as soon as you find out it connects to the far right-wing intelligence, like the SLA is the CIA, then it disappears from the face of the earth. You can't let those systems of agent provocateurs get into the news. Once they're there, they sink like a bunch of dead weight into the ocean, and you don't hear any more about it. The news media are basically, they're afraid of change, and they don't want to tell you when it reverses. If it's a leftist, you hear about it. When the left turns out to be a Nazi, then it disappears from the news. Now, getting back to Singlob as the hub of the wheel, I mentioned last week that he was fired by Jimmy Carter when he was stationed in South Korea because he disagreed with Jimmy Carter's not wanting the neutron bomb. And, of course, that ties into the Israel, Cameroon, and Alexander Haig pushing the neutron bomb. And I'll be doing more on Haig next week. Singlob is president of World Anti-Communist League, which is the international connection of death squads and the Operation Condor. And hopefully I'll update Condor, the Nicaraguan Contras, Mr. Hassenfuss, and the people related to Hassenfuss, and tie it is, again, to the network of Otto Skorzeny and Reinhard Gehlen after the war. Singlob represents the World Anti-Communist League. He also represents the National Security Council. He sat there with Ronald Reagan when Reagan hired Lieutenant, or discussed, and put the wheels going with Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, with Mr. McFarlane, with Admiral John Poindexter, with George Bush, and he's the one who could disseminate 100 million illegally against the laws of Congress and call it humanitarian aid when it was really weapons, and they used half the cash they can't account for narcotics and gun running, and Congress is going to open that up as soon as they reconvene again. Singlob started the Soldier Fortune magazine, as I said. He put Robert Brown from the Marines in charge of that, and that is the organization that recruits mercenaries to do the work for the National Security Council. As they say on television these past days, Ronald Reagan had his own army. It's supposed to be an advisory committee that was active. Singlob on the board of Western Goals, and I wrote about those connections at the time of the murder of Larry McDonald on the Korean Airline. And also on the board is Edward Teller of Star Wars, and we make a full cycle. All of these people connect, these different subjects that are in the news connect with each other, and I'll bring them up. And Singlob is the main sponsor or part of the American Security Council. The National Security Council was put together in 1947 as a branch of the executive government, and I'll go into details of how that was formed and what the charter was on the National Security Council, now that's in the news so much. The American Security Council was set up by the FBI and persons from the Bureau, J. Edgar Hoover's Bureau, and the far right-wing conservatives, and they formed that Georgetown Center for Strategic Studies. They're the think tank for the National Security Council. They are identical twins. They have no function as part of the American government, but they are part of the Heritage Foundation, the Coors family, and all the right-wing activity that takes place in this country is under the umbrella of the American Security Council. So I'll be sharing that with you. Now, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that I want to share with you before this hour is up, just to give you an inkling of how the news is breaking at this present time, because this is not a trial balloon when the Wall Street Journal has an article like this. You know pretty well that Ronald Reagan's time is up. I mentioned last week the possibility of impeachment, and this is the article. It's titled, Reagan's Fondness for Covert Action Threatens His Activist Foreign Policy. Written by John Walcott. The Reagan administration's penchant for substituting covert action instead of foreign policy is threatening to revive the partisan squabbling that crippled the United States policy. It paralyzed the Central Intelligence Agency and the Pentagon 10 years ago. The Democratic leaders of the new Senate have promised to begin digging deep for the secrets of the administration's policies towards Iran, Libya, and Nicaragua. If they want to dig deep, I'll send them some outlines. The press already thinks it smells Watergate-style abuses of presidential power. While in congressional investigations coming, as a wide-open battle for presidency begins, could unravel the fragile consensus that has favored the activist foreign policy that Ronald Reagan struggled so hard to create. The fragile consensus. That was his pals from the polls and nothing else. How else could these elections have turned out the way they did? The article goes on, if that happens, however, the president has mostly himself to blame. Time and time again, he has turned to covert action to carry out policies that Congress would never support, as in Nicaragua, or from his own advisors when they didn't agree, in Libya or Iran. The fondness for clandestine activities was encouraged by CIA Director William Casey. Casey came from the OSS and with Reinhard Galen and as a Knight of Malta, and he thinks he's a lord unto himself. He encouraged the president. And the article goes by, and the president's national security advisors, they have unnerved both the defense secretary, Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of State George Shultz. They have rattled the professionals in the CIA and the military. All of them remember that one lesson of the Nixon years is not to get involved in policies. The public doesn't support them. You shouldn't get involved with them. They have to be popular or you're in trouble. Particularly, they can be unpopular, but they have to be legal. When they're unpopular and illegal, you're really in trouble. It is Mr. Reagan's self-assurance and his visionary nature, the very qualities that made him an effective leader, that got him into trouble. He isn't one to quit doing what he thinks is right simply because Congress or the cabinet won't support it. And this is part of the symptom of his being mentally sick. In Central America, for example, Congress's refusal to provide aid to the anti-Sandinista rebels in Nicaragua prompted Mr. Reagan, this time with broad support from his advisors, to use the National Security Council, keep away from prying congressmen, claim executive privilege, carry on his secret war against the Sandinistas. In Libya, the administration's problem was different. From Mr. Reagan's first day in office, his advisors didn't know how seriously to take Muammar Gaddafi. They received multiple intelligence reports that said he might assassinate the president or use as officials, and that was all wrong intelligence given to him. So he turned his action to covert aid, and that boomerang. If Mr. Reagan's instincts provided the motives for his activities, the presence of the national security staff of a veteran covert operator, Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, gave a unique opportunity to run any operations he wanted out of the old executive office building. Colonel North is a gung-ho veteran of the covert operations of Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and the press has an interest in the administration's clandestine activities that are focused on him. I have to jump down here because our time is up. The article concludes by saying covert action is no substitute for popular support or for a consensus within the administration. If the president and advisors were gambling that their policies would set in motion a Congress that would rally behind him later, they have lost. The damage is enormous. By making U.S. policy once again a partisan issue, the president may have undone the one thing he wanted most to do, to restore America's ability to act decisively on the world stage. He has neutralized every bit of that, and it is very exciting to see that Mr. Phony Baloney has finally been exposed by his own party, by his own friends, much less his enemies. Now, this concludes the World Watchers program, and before I finish, we want to thank Uncle Gaylord's Ice Cream Cafe for this patron grant.